Welcome to the Veterinary Financial Podcast, where we discuss financial freedom and professional success. I'm Meredith Jones, a veterinarian and financial planner for vets. Our guest today is Dr. Marie Holloway-Chuck. She's an emergency and critical care specialist veterinarian, the founder of Reviving VetMed, and she has a new book out called A Compassionate Calling. Marie, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
So we go way back. We first met when I was a fourth-year vet student at NC State, and you were an emergency critical care resident. Yeah, and I remember, because I graduated back in 2008, and the ECC doctors would come in to our internal medicine rotation and either ask for a student to assist with cases, or they would just be looking for advice from the internists.
That's right. Yeah. Those are some of my happiest memories were during my residency at NC State.
Yeah. Yeah. I love NC State. You have had such an interesting career path. So I want to get into talking more about your book. But to start with, I'd love to just have you walk through what have been the big steps leading you to where you are today in your career.
Okay, well, you touched on one of them, which was definitely my residency. I think if we back up before then, I grew up with two veterinarian parents. I spent the bulk of my childhood working in my mom's companion animal practice. I did everything from, you know, emptying garbages, cleaning floors, to answering phones and assisting with animal care in the hospital. It wasn't a hard stretch for me to decide that I wanted to go into vet medicine, which I did at a pretty young age. I went straight into pre-vet and then was accepted into vet school. I always thought I would join my mom in practice, and ultimately I decided that general practice probably wasn't going to be the route I was going to go. I felt really called to do more when I got to my fourth year rotations. I thought, gosh, I didn't realize there were specialties and, you know, internship. So I applied for an internship and I got that at Washington State University. Then from there is where I fell in love with emergency and critical care. So then that's where I moved on to NC State, where I met you. And that's where I fell in love with teaching and research. And I loved academia. And so I ended up taking on a role at the Ontario Vet College, where I was on faculty for 5 years. And I loved it. By all definitions, it was my dream job. Unfortunately, it was really far away from friends and family. And because of that, I didn't really have much of a life outside of work. So I was working on the weekends, working at night, working while I was on call, because I didn't have a life outside of work. And so I kind of jumped on that workaholism hamster wheel. And that led me to experience burnout. I didn't know it at the time. I just thought, gosh, I don't think I'm cut out for this. Everybody else looks like they're thriving and I feel like I'm struggling. And I ended up, unfortunately, deciding to resign from my job and not really knowing what I was going to do. I just thought I'm going to move closer to family and hopefully that will, everything will sort itself out. I continued down the road of some mental health challenges, again, workaholism, perfectionism, burnout, and found myself really struggling even after leaving. And so it was shortly after I left the academic job that I was in a car accident and really shook me up. You know, I thought, okay, this is a sign that things aren't on the right path. I'm not on the right path somehow. And so through a series of different things, you know, I took a yoga teacher training program, meditation teacher training, started really diving into therapy and mental well-being, and continued to cultivate my love of teaching. So as I was learning about my own mental health and well-being and burnout prevention, I started to try to share that information with others. So I started hosting retreats and offering programs online, webinars, and well, that was kind of before webinars, but, you know, sessions and seminars at conferences. And really for the last 10 years, I've been heavy into mental health and well-being advocacy. So much of what I do is online teaching, coaching, a lot of resource creation, podcast recording, just getting as much information out there into the world on mental health and well-being for veterinary professionals specifically, but for all caregiving professionals.
Yeah, that is so awesome. Thank you for sharing your journey. Tell us about your book and why you decided to write a book.
Yeah, so the book is called A Compassionate Calling, What It Really Means to Be a Veterinarian. You know, I started thinking about writing a book when I came across a stat a few years ago from the Merck Animal Health Wellbeing Study that suggested that less than half of veterinarians would recommend the profession to others. You know, I've been such a fan of our profession for all of my life. I love what we do. I don't dispute that it's really hard, but there's so many amazing things about being a vet. I mean, if you ask most kids, many of them will say, I want to be a veterinarian when I grow up. And so I couldn't really reconcile why there were so many people that were feeling disgruntled with our profession. And I started to recognize more and more that there was a big disconnect between our childhood beliefs about what vet medicine is about and what we do as veterinarians and what the reality is when we actually get into practice. And so part of writing the book was to really put out into the world for all veterinarians, for those wanting to go into vet med, for those in vet med, to really grasp the nuances of what we do and why we feel like our job is hard at the end of the day. Because I think if we can name those situations, we can better cope with them. And then around the same time, I started to notice this shift between the general public's perceptions and happiness with veterinarians and how we were experiencing that on the veterinary clinical side. We, I think for years, have heard clients say like, oh, you know, this dentistry procedure is paying for your new car, or, you know, yes. Just really assuming that we're like swimming in money and, you know, we make as much as physicians do. Mm-hmm. It just seemed like there was more and more disconnect and misconceptions on the part of the general population and us as veterinary professionals. And so I wanted to really highlight the fact that this job is not easy. There's lots of hard things. And just building a little bit of empathy and understanding and awareness on the part of the general public for what the veterinary profession is experiencing. So the book is really intended for everybody, anybody who knows a vet, who is a vet, who wants to be a vet. It's really intended for them to fulsomely understand our profession.
So what was the process like for writing the book and how long did it take?
Oh, it took years. You know, I ended up submitting a book proposal to several agents before the pandemic. So I think it was about 2018. I was thinking of this. I submitted those proposals. I got a little bit of feedback that was like, you know, you need a bigger social media following. You know, we're not going to take you on as an author. I felt a little bit, you know, disappointed, but I kind of put it off to the side. And then a publisher reached out to me to review a book proposal that they had received. And at the end of the book proposal assessment, they asked the question, do you have any ideas for books relevant to vet medicine that are not yet published? And I was like, well, I have this proposal. It's not a textbook, but it's like a narrative nonfiction book. And it's about the vet profession. They said, oh, we'd be totally interested in reading it. So I sent it to them. And right away, they were like, we love it. We're an academic publisher, so we're not a trade publisher, but we would love to take on your book. And so they gave me a 5-year time period to write the book. It took me about 3 years to write the book. And then there was, of course, a series of revisions. And now it's out in the world. It was a long process. There's a lot of research in the book. I wanted to include a lot of stories. So there was a lot of reaching out to people in the veterinary space, asking them to share their stories. I mean, you were somebody who shared with me as well. So I've been able to capture a lot of quotations from people in the veterinary space to really show the diverse perspectives of people's experiences. And there's a lot of stories in there, many of which are my own, but some of which are from other people in our profession sharing their thoughts and experiences.
It's interesting that you talked about the social media, and it's like you have a good following on social media. So,
according to the publisher, is not high enough. I think they want you to be in the millions of Instagram followers, and I'm definitely not there.
I think sometimes it gets overlooked in, you know, anything in the media where it's like, okay, but you have a niche, you know, you've got so many veterinary professionals who are so interested in what you do. And so, yeah, it's funny how that works. So, and I wanted to mention too, because I went to your book launch party. I remember someone asking, or I might have even been the one who asked, whether there was going to be an audiobook.
Yes. Yeah. So I've just signed the contract for the audiobook. I'm going to be recording it next month. I don't know how long it will take for them to edit that, but I think they said final edits will be due. Like, I'll have to come back and do some corrections if they hear anything that isn't quite clear about a month after, and then that'll be released. That was a big process. I think I might have shared in the book launch party that I had to audition to read my own book, that they were like, oh, no, no. They're like, we have actors. We have trained speech people who read books. And I was like, but it's my book. It's my story. Finally, they allowed me to do an audition, which even that took a lot of persuading. And then finally, they decided that, yes, they would allow me to read it. So I gotta start prepping my voice now.
Yeah, that's something like it, you were probably having to prepare for the audition to read your own book, right?
Exactly. I know, it's ironic.
It is. Yeah. So you mentioned that you have stories in the book. And so I always think that's so awesome. And it makes the book so much more compelling because you're pulling from not just your experiences, but experiences from a lot of veterinary professionals. And so whether it's your story or someone else's story, can you relay some of the concepts from one of your favorite stories?
Mm-hmm. Gosh, I mean, there's so many. And, you know, the book, it's divided up into four parts. So the first part is my journey in vet medicine. That's just wrought with stories from like vet school and my internship and residency and studying for boards and my journey with burnout and all of those things. You know, for example, there's the chapter on student debt. I share stories from colleagues of mine that just had crushing amounts of student debt and were balancing being a new practice owner with having the student debt to pay off and not paying themselves for many years and having to rely on their partner's income, or for some having to support their partners who were still in school when they were only earning a small income. You know, I think those were very compelling. I think for me, the hardest story that I told was a story about a mistake that I had made with one of my patients in my residency that resulted in her dying. So it was a little dog that I was involved with the feeding tube placement. I misinterpreted the x-ray that had actually shown that the tube was in her airway. And so she got fed food into her lungs, and then sadly, she passed away. You know, that case, as hard as it is for me to talk about it, and as much as it still sticks with me today, I just feel it's so important for us to have an open conversation about mistakes, to normalize the fact that we're human and we make mistakes. I'm a pet owner too, and so I know how devastating it is when we are on the receiving end if a mistake happens with our own pet or our child or ourselves. And we have to remember that we're still humans at the end of the day. And so humanizing those of us in vet medicine was really important to me as well.
Yeah. So you talked earlier about the owners who say, I bought a wing of this hospital, or you know, make that sort of comment. And I've heard that as well in working as an emergency vet. How do your experiences in emergency and critical care show up in the book?
Well, I mean, that's the lens through which all of my clinical practice has been. And so all of my stories really are in the context of emergency and critical care. I think it really relates to the fact that we deal with a lot of very high stress, high intensity situations. I talk about moral stress, and that's, of course, a huge challenge in emergency practice. People can usually budget when they go to the vet for their annual exams and vaccines, but nobody's really budgeting for an emergency, especially not emergency in the thousands or even ten thousands of dollars. And so those situations are really distressing. And we're in a position where we have to maybe make a life and death decision around a very large sum of money in a very short period of time. Mm-hmm. Certainly, too, euthanasia in the context of emergency comes up as well in often those situations where people can't afford to pay. And then I would say, you know, there's a whole chapter that I wrote on the ICU and our experiences being in an intensive care unit as critical care specialists. The fact that we can do really amazing things for animals today that we couldn't do even 20 years ago when I first started practicing. it's mind-boggling where technology has gone and all of the things that we're able to do. And I think especially on the pet owning side, many, many pet owners have no idea that we can do dialysis, that we can ventilate patients, that we can give blood transfusions. They just don't know that. And so those were really fun chapters for me to write and, you know, sharing about cases and other things that have really stuck with me over the years.
Yeah, technology has come such a long way. And then also research and what we're able to provide for pets that we it used to be something that, you know, concepts that were new in human medicine 20 years ago. And then now some of those are being incorporated into vet med. And yeah, it used to be impossible.
Yeah. Well, and even there's so many more One Health initiatives. Like I have a chapter in the book on the pandemic and how we dealt with that as a profession. One of the things that I thought was so cool as a critical care specialist is that we had ventilator shortages across the country, both in Canada and the US. And so we as a specialty college came together and put a whole list of all of the hospitals and institutions that had ventilators, because these are all human grade ventilators, and were willing to rent them out to the human hospitals to lend them. You know, we just like take it and bring it back when bring it back when you're done. You know, that was utilized in a lot of different places. And awful to think if there was an animal that would have needed the ventilator and couldn't have had it. But at the same time, just so heartwarming to know that we can help in human medicine too. Like it's not just that we're kind of waiting to adopt their stuff, but that, you know, we're actually doing really cool stuff too. And hey, we've got these ventilators that are just as good as yours, if not nicer, and you're welcome to borrow them if you want. So I thought that was really fun.
Yeah, and they were probably newer and hadn't been used as much as the human ventilators.
Exactly.
How did you balance talking about the challenges of vet med with being encouraging or talking about all of the joys of vet med?
Such a great question. And I think especially today where, well, first of all, as humans, we all have this negativity bias, right? So we all tend to focus on the negative. And we're in a space in vet med right now where things feel really hard. You know, the short staffing, the high cost of animal care, just the high demands of pet parents that we've never experienced before. And so I want to highlight the challenges that we experience to paint a clear and honest picture of what the realities are. And I worked very hard to make sure to hold space for all the things that we're doing to make it better. So it didn't matter what the chapter was and, you know, how challenging things were. There was some sort of silver lining, some sort of there's organizations or committees or individuals that are doing research in this area to figure this out or have cultivated these resources to help, or just a simple call to action. You know, this is something we need to probably put a little bit more energy into thinking about in terms of how we can make this better in the future. So even in the chapter on challenges with clients, I wanted to talk about the highs and the lows. I have just the most incredible experiences with clients that have been so grateful and so thankful, and that we've kept in touch for years after their pets were under my care. And then I've had those that were career changing and not in a good way that really knocked me on my feet and led me to consider, gosh, is this worth doing? You know, if I'm, I really am just here to help. And if in trying to help means I'm going to be yelled at or harassed or bullied, then I don't really want to do this. And sadly, I think that is a place where a lot of professionals have found themselves. I think that is a societal shift. I think we're seeing that not just in the profession, but in all professions where people are just a little bit more rude and intolerant than they used to be. Some of it is just having an awareness around where things are at and the things that we can do either for ourselves to better cope in those situations or as a collective to try and make things better for veterinary medicine as a whole.
Yeah. And that reminds me of your website. And so talk about some of the resources that you share on revivingvetmed.com.
Yeah. Thank you for asking. I started out by just wanting to get as much content out into the world as possible regarding mental health and well-being. I know when I first started struggling 10, 15 years ago now, I didn't feel like I had any resources. I was like, I don't know where to turn. I don't even know what burnout is. And thankfully, the conversation has really shifted and that we have a lot of people offering really excellent content, from veterinary medical associations to national organizations and to individuals and coaches in this space, and even social workers today, which is wonderful. I really wanted to make a hub of resources, and recognizing that everybody takes in information differently, I have made sure that there are posters and downloads that people can put in their practices or read on their own, that there are blog posts with information and evidence-based links that people can read, podcast episodes that started out as a monologue podcast and have now shifted into interviews so that I can bring diverse voices into the conversation. Then we have things like online programs. We have one-on-one coaching. Our coaches are a diverse group of veterinary-focused coaches around things like menopause, ADHD, resilience, leadership. There's all sorts of different ways that we can support individuals in our profession. And most recently, we've also started offering lunch and learns, as well as critical incident group debriefings. So if there's ever a situation in the hospital that is really, really intense, and the group is just really struggling to figure out how to cope and to move on, then we have trained facilitators that can come in and do a 60 to 90 minute formal debrief to really talk through normalizing the trauma response, talking through healthy coping strategies, and just really encouraging that peer support within the team.
That's such a great resource to have. Yeah, that last one, especially because sometimes there will be a situation, especially an emergency, but I mean, it can happen in any hospital, right? Any hospital setting where something happens that just really impacts the team, even more so than a typical bad day. And So that's awesome to have that resource available to walk people through thoughts and feelings and how do we move on as a team as well.
Yeah, exactly.
So who facilitates those particular conversations?
Yeah. So I'm a trained facilitator with critical incident group debriefing. So I did my training last year and I'm excited to be able to offer that. And then I also have a counselor on my team who's a registered vet tech and went back to school to get her counseling degree. She is also trained as a critical incident group debriefer. And so depending on her schedules and availability, it's one or the two of us that will be able to facilitate that.
Oh, that's so great. Okay, so people very experienced in vet med that can help walk teams through that. That's so great. How have vet med colleagues who have read your book, how have they responded so far?
Well, I've had a few people reach out to me and just say, first of all, how much the book really resonated. I'm thinking of one individual who was just like, oh my gosh, as I was reading it, I was like writing notes and highlighting it and dog-earing it. And it just took me back to like my journey in vet med and all of these things that I, you know, never really could put words to previously, but had experienced. So I think at the end of the day, it feels very validating. It normalizes some of the challenging experiences that professionals have had. I've definitely had people reach out to me and say, wow, I've been in this profession for 25, 30 years, and I learned things reading your book that I didn't know before. So that has been really, really fun to hear as well. Mm-hmm. I love hearing what people think. I love hearing what has resonated most. And I hope that the more individuals, especially those outside of our profession as well, who can read it and better understand it. I've definitely heard from people who said, I'm going to lend the book to my partner or my parents or so-and-so, because I still don't think that they really fully understand the challenges, you know, that we experience. And so that's a great benefit of the book as well.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. And I'm sure those vets who are like, I learned things, you know, and they've been out for 25, 30 years. A lot of that is probably all the work you put into the research part of the book as well. So that's really, really validating from a lot of different perspectives hearing that. Mm-hmm. All right. Is there anything surprising that you've heard from colleagues in response to your book?
Well, I think probably that last thing that I mentioned, that they've learned things, you know, after being in the profession so long. I mean, I guess, to be honest, I learned some things too. Like there was statistics I didn't know before, and there was even on the chapter on pet health insurance, when I talk about the impact of pet health insurance. I mean, obviously, there's wonderful, wonderful things about pet health insurance diminishing episodes of moral distress, because when our families have money, there's less of a stress around conversations with regards to finances and financial euthanasia. Mm. I had this inkling that I wondered if insurance was causing overdiagnosis or over testing or over prescribing. And indeed, there's actually research to show that that is the case in certain groups of individuals who have been studied, who have been presented with cases with insurance and without, and have made different treatment recommendations or diagnostic recommendations to those families. So I think, surprisingly, there's nuances that we didn't realize that were there or that we're just now learning. Even in the technology chapter, like, there was some new technologies that I didn't even realize were being developed. I was like, wow. You know, I think those are the big things that I've been hearing from people, is just that, wow, like, there's just so many things involved in our profession that I didn't realize were a thing.
All right, great. So thank you so much for sharing about your book and about your experiences. What is the best way for our colleagues to get in touch with you?
Oh, well, thank you for asking. I do spend some time on social media, so you can follow me on Instagram at Marie Holowaychuk, or LinkedIn is probably where most of my followers are. Dr. Marie Holowaychuk is my profile on LinkedIn. You can also check out my website, marieholowaychuk.com. There's information there about my speaking, my programs, my coaching, and definitely my book, A Compassionate Calling, which also has its own website as well, just dedicated to the book and some resources that go along with it. So those would be probably the best places to follow me.
All right, cool. And that brings us to our last question. Marie, what is your best advice for our listeners?
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, if I'm putting my mental health advocate hat on, I think it would be to not wait until you're really struggling to reach out to a mental health provider. You know, I touched on the fact that I have experienced mental health challenges through the years. I have been diagnosed with depression, and there are definitely times where that dovetails strongly with anxiety, and I'll have a lot of symptoms in the way of panic episodes or, you know, racing anxious thoughts. And I'll think, oh my gosh, okay, now I need to reach out to someone. And if we can treat our mental health more like our cars that just need that regular maintenance of an oil change, you know, a fill up, a wash, you know, whatever it is to keep them running well, I would urge you to think of your mental health the same way. And I know for me, I can do better when I am doing consistent things to take care of my mental health. So whether that's connecting with a mental health professional regularly, whether it's getting outside, whether it's moving my body, practicing mindfulness, find what works for you. Because if you don't have your mental health, if your mental health is not well, then you're going to feel very challenged in all of the rest of the work that you do as a veterinary professional. So for me, that's foundational. And that's where I would plug people to focus on.
All right, fantastic. So Marie, thank you so much for sharing your experiences and your expertise. And thank you for being such an advocate for mental health and well-being in the profession as well.
Oh, thanks, Meredith. This has been so much fun. I really appreciate you having me on. So thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. My mission is to help you take control of your finances and build the life you envision. If you'd like to see how financial planning can support your goals, visit allvetfinancial.com and click the Book Now button to schedule a free intro call. Until next time, take care and continue your path to financial success. This podcast is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered individualized financial advice. If a specific investment is mentioned, it should not be considered a recommendation or endorsement to buy or sell the investment. All investments involve risk. Past performance does not guarantee future results. You are encouraged to seek the advice of a financial professional before implementing any investment strategies discussed. Yay, compliance.